Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, we are the hardest working men in show business in the sense that we have dispatched even with intro and outro music for this episode so that we can get it right to the consumer so that you can dial in and listen to this before tonight's round two and three coverage of the NFL draft. So this is a draft recap episode. We are going to walk you through everything that happened in the first round, some great players that are still available, and lots of other things as well. So, Pipe, let's get right into this content, man. I know you are an aficionado of all things draft, as I am. We had we were burning up the text airways last night as this thing went down. Let's talk about this QB class. I mean, this is kind of the big headline. We had all the QBs go in the first round. What's your take on who did well, who got a good fit? And what are some picks you like QB wise and picks you don't like?
Well, I'm going to start with the number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield, because, you know, cause he's number one overall, and it was a bit of a surprise to many people because Cleveland hadn't tipped their hand at all. Right. And I think that the consensus was it was either going to be Sam Darnold or maybe Josh Allen. Those were the rumors.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the Baker Mayfield pick for him. Like, I think I would have liked Darnold more.
Yeah.
Because he feels like more of a sure bet.
Yep.
But maybe it's just that I love players with a lot of swagger.
I do too.
But I kind of like Baker Mayfield, and I kind of feel like he's enough of just a hard-headed, egotistical guy. Like, competitive egotistical, not you know, Johnny Manziel egotistical.
Sure.
To overcome the Cleveland, you know, malaise.
Yeah, I like this pick too, Pipe. And I'm glad you mentioned the Cleveland malaise. I think they were looking for a culture pick as much as anything. And, I mean, that franchise needs a total reset. And they need a guy who's alpha enough to swagger in there on day one and change the culture in their building. And I think he is that guy. Love the pick compared to Josh Allen. I'm so glad that Josh Allen to Cleveland talk abated sometime last week and they were able to move past that. Now,
can I ask you a quick question? Is there anyone in the first round, any team in the first round that you would have been like, Josh Allen was a good pick?
No, zero teams.
Yeah. See,
honest to gosh, zero teams.
He would have had to go
third round or later.
I was going to say middle of the second round or later, but second round, it's like, there's a lot of starters in the second round. He's not a starter.
Absolutely.
He's not even a project. He's just a bust.
He's a bust with a huge arm. He's Kyle Bowler. He's J.P. Lossman. Yes. Remember this player out of Tulane? Actually, the Lossman comparison is really apt because they played at a similar level, and you know they both looked the part. They both had huge arms.
I feel so bad for Buffalo fans because they're so committed and rabid and down on their luck, and they haven't had a good quarterback since Jim Kelly. I mean, I think they've had some okay years here and there, but just nothing.
Sure.
And this is the guy who, I mean, they could have had Josh Rosen or Lamar Jackson, both of whom I think will be quality NFL starters with the potential of being elite.
Dude.
And they got this guy.
I totally agree. And let's talk about that. There's more I want to say in the Bills because I actually love their second pick in the first round, but we'll get there in a minute.
All right.
I loved Arizona trading up to get Josh Rosen. I think this was a punk rock move in all the best ways. They saw an opportunity. They jumped on it. You know, as much as I like Baker Mayfield, and I do, and as much as I love Lamar Jackson, and I do, you know, Rosen, as we've discussed, maybe the safest pick at quarterback. He's probably the most ready to step in and play. You know, he takes the keys to an offense that still has, you know, some parts. I mean, there's still some people in Arizona who can do some things. And, you know, I think it's a good culture fit for Rosen, too. You know, I like that market for him. I just like the fit.
The fact that he dropped to 10 is the best thing Arizona has going for him too. Because if he had gone to like the Jets at 3, I think he would be a good quarterback. But the fact that he's pissed off that he dropped is going to that adds an edge of focus. Like, you know, one of the big knocks on him was a lack of focus. Like his mind is just sort of, he's a high functioning guy whose mind goes a lots of places. Well, this is going to laser focus him on being really good, I think. And so Yeah, the only downside to that pick was not for Arizona. Great pick for them.
Yeah.
Is for him in that they're in rebuild mode. Larry Fitzgerald is still productive, but he's probably only has a year or two left.
Sure.
Great running back, mediocre offensive line, not a lot of other weapons. So they have some work to do to support him, but yeah. I think that's going to be a great pick for them for the next, 10 years, two contracts.
Yep, two contracts. He's going to be a really, really solid player, and you know, I think he will have the best rookie year of all these guys. You know, and it remains to be seen who's going to get on the field. Really, I mean, Buffalo.
If Lamar Jackson unseats Joe Flacco, he's going to have the best rookie year.
I agree, man. But I don't know. I'm such not a Ravens fan. You know, nothing about the Ravens excites me. And there were like 10 teams that I wanted Lamar to go to, all of whom would have been exciting for me in some way. Like Lamar to Jacksonville was a fascinating narrative to me. Lamar to New England was a fascinating narrative. Lamar to New Orleans. So when New Orleans mortgaged the farm to move up, I thought for sure they were going to grab Lamar Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
And they went with a small school pass rusher who is very athletic but very raw, has absolutely no plan when he rushes the passer, but has won on talent.
He only had 8 sacks last year against bad competition. He didn't win that often.
He didn't win that often. Exactly. So, dude, the whole Lamar falling thing was fascinating to me. I'm not shocked because, as we've discussed ad nauseum, people in this kind of tradition-laden world of NFL player evaluation just kind of have no idea what they're looking at year after year, which is proven by the fact that Josh Allen, you know, goes in the top 10 and Lamar Jackson waits until 32. Like, nobody knows anything, Pipe, is the thing.
Yeah, about quarterbacks, that's true. Here's the thing that I think is going to happen with Lamar Jackson. Now, we have said on multiple podcasts just unabashed adoration of this player. But he fell to 30 because of people's love of tradition. You know who else is a starting quarterback because of people's love of tradition?
True.
Joe Flacco, who sucks.
That's true.
Joe Flacco is a terrible NFL quarterback. He wasn't good when the Ravens were good.
Yeah.
He was supported by good players. Yeah, now the Ravens aren't good, and he's really, really not good.
Yeah, that's it.
And
that's
so you get this clash in one team of what could be, if we had a creative, open-minded way of doing offense.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're probably going to go with, which is a guy who's going to complete 57% of his passes, throw as many interceptions as touchdowns, and lead the team to another 7-9 record or something. And that's Joe Flacco.
Here's what's interesting about this QB class in light of what you just said, and I think it's a great point. So I watched a lot of USC this year. I watched a lot of UCLA. Those are kind of favorite night game teams, if you will. And, you know, I watched a couple Baker Mayfield games and several Lamar Jackson games. And I'll say this about this whole class. Of all those guys, including Josh Allen, who I barely count as being in this class, even though he's very much in this quarterback class. Sam Darnold was on a good team, a decent team, and it stayed decent. Josh Rosen was on a mediocre to decent team, and it stayed decent. Lamar Jackson was on a bad team and he made it like occasionally incredible. They would mm-hmm. burn a Florida State to the ground and you're just like, how did this happen? Granted, Florida State's a little down, but still. And Baker Mayfield, same thing. You know, Oklahoma is a different situation than Louisville, but I mean, I think Baker Mayfield elevated his team. He could take a mediocre to decent team and make it great. And I saw some of the same things from Lamar Jackson. So, I mean, if you're making that kind of investment, isn't that what you want? You know, at the end of the day, don't you want a guy who is going to make you great, a guy who can elevate, a middling team and make it relevant? And I think, you know, that's kind of what Cleveland was rolling the dice on. I think that's why Ozzie traded back into the, you know, into the end of this draft to grab Lamar Jackson, which was a bold move, and I love it, and I think it's going to pay dividends for the Ravens. But yeah, I mean, if you're Buffalo this morning, you're excited about Tremaine Edmonds. You know,
mm-hmm.
great pick. You know, freaky athlete. But how are you feeling about Josh Allen? You know, I just...
Oh, Buffalo fans are talking themselves into him so
hard. They're talking themselves into it, which is what you do.
They're,
you know, right?
They're ignoring every... Oh, I did this with Christian Ponder when the Vikings took him at 12. I did everything in my power to convince myself that, you know, accurate game manager.
He's smart. He's cerebral. Yeah. He won't turn the ball
sneaky
over.
Athletic. Yeah. No, he he was a noodle-armed quarterback who couldn't tell one jersey color from another. But good luck with that, Buffalo. I feel really bad for the fans. And this, I think this is another instance where the owner fell in love with a player. That's what they were saying on the broadcast last night. They're like, man, the owner came to his workouts and was enamored. I'm like, oh, that's a terrible sign.
It is a terrible, terrible sign.
You hire people to scout and coach because they know players. You go make billions of dollars. That's your job.
Dude, Buffalo has very active ownership. They're very out front. And that almost never works well. You know,
See Jones, Jerry.
Exactly. It's usually a recipe for disaster. Now, Piper, of all the kind of fringe quarterbacks that are left, who do you like the best? Let's talk about that.
None of them.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like, I mean, there was a clear class break for me between the top four that did not include Allen, or is it top three? I think it's top four. And then the rest, I mean, I hear good things about Kyle Laletta. I don't think Mason Rudolph is any good. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, they're all sort of like, they would very much sneak up on me if they were good.
Most definitely. Well, Pipe, let's use that as a bridge into some players who are left on the board who are really, really good football players. And I think all the guys we're about to mention could probably have found their way into the first round in one way or another. Who are some of the guys that are left, Pipe, that you really like?
The two that stood out to me that I'm stunned did not go in the first round, especially in light of who people moved up to take, are Darius Geis from LSU. And Harold Landry from Boston College. Will Hernandez is a third, the guard. Now, I can see why he didn't go, because all the offensive linemen that went in the first round deserved to go in the first round. They were all good players, so it's inevitable that somebody's going to bump down. But the fact that Geis didn't go, and I think he's probably the first or second best running back in the draft. Barkley is widely considered to be the first. Geis might be as good. And Landry, I think, is a better pass rusher than I'm forgetting his name now. The dude who the Saints moved up to get.
Yeah, Marcus Davenport.
Yeah, I think Landry's a better player than him. So the fact that those guys are still on the board is a shocker to me.
It is a shocker. I love Will Hernandez.
Yes,
and I love how strong this draft is in the interior line. Man, this is such a good center guard draft. I mean, Frank Ragnow goes in the first in the first rounds. Billy Price goes in the first round. Obviously, Quentin Nelson.
Isaiah Wynn.
Yeah, Isaiah Wynn. What a stellar draft for interior linemen. And somebody's going to get a starter in Will Hernandez early in the second round. Another guy I like in that position grouping, James Daniels, center out of Iowa. Dude, I love Iowa linemen.
Especially interior. They haven't been awesome at putting tackles out there. Yeah. But all their guys are good when they move inside. They're just like big, mean, strong, technically sound guys.
Big, mean, strong, technically sound guys who have played in a pro-style offense. They've played with their hand in the dirt. They know how to run block. I love these Iowa kids, man. They're well coached. So speaking of Iowa kids, on the other side of the ball, Josh Jackson, cornerback. I think he represents a great value there in the second round. A guy that I love, Pipe, and I like him even better than Harold Landry. So it's so hard to project edge rushers, right? Because, so many things have to go right to get sacks. A lot of it's predicated on, what kind of defense you run, how often you're blitzing, what kind of offenses the other teams in your conference run, et cetera, et cetera. A guy I love, man, and I actually watched him a lot this year, is Hercules Mata'afa from Washington State. Dude, I watch Washington State almost every Saturday night because I love the air raid.
And I was going to say, because you're a big Mike Leach fan.
Dude, yeah, I like Mike Leach, man. I do. I like him a lot. And this kid, man, just like flew off the tape at me on the defensive side of the ball. So he's an edge guy at the next level. He's about 6'2", 255, not ideal length and size there. But Just lived in opposing backfields.
That's like standard pass rusher size now. Like that is a position in the NFL. Like it used to be,
yeah, absolutely,
that if you were a defensive end, you had to be, you know, a small defensive end was what, 270?
270, yeah.
And then like you had these situational pass rushers who were 250, or you were a 3-4 outside linebacker. Now just like outside pass rusher is a position.
Absolutely. And this kid, man, so he played in the interior a lot at Washington State. So he was down, like, kind of shifting around over the nose, over the guards, you know, shaded to, you know, to the outside of the guards or whatever. But this is a guy, I think he's going to be a heck of a 3-4 outside edge rusher for somebody. And I'll be interested to see where he goes. Nick Chubb, you know, another good running back prospect who...
I am skeptical of Nick Chubb as a professional prospect.
Dude, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Nick Chubb thing.
Slow running backs don't translate well to the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a scheme thing with Nick Chubb. You know, I see a lot of Alfred Morris in Nick Chubb, you know, okay. And I see a guy who can get 1,000 yards on the right team. You know, he gets what's blocked. He's not going to light the world on fire like Sony Michel. You know, he's not going to be a home run hitter. But I think in the second round, Nick Chubb is a nice running back for a team who needs that kind of a guy.
Yeah,
you know, so I think he'll be a nice piece for somebody. Darius Geis, however.
To be fair on Chubb, he was an elite athlete until he hurt his knee, I think twice, which means that he might just need some recovery time. Professional training staffs tend to be better than college training staffs, too. So he might be a steal. You know, he might be a guy who is more Darius Geis than he is, you know, late second round pick.
Yeah, absolutely. Piper, this is slightly off topic, but... whose feed of the draft did you watch last night?
I was stuck watching ESPN's, which is my least favorite.
Really? Talk about that. Talk about why it's your least favorite.
Because Kirk Herbstreit is an idiot.
Dude, Kirk Herbstreit, who got very florid and old-looking, like, overnight.
Yeah, he looks like a combination of somebody who uses spray-on tans and really enjoys martinis.
He looks like Earl Bruce, who was his coach at Ohio State. But this only gives me glee because I've been like a lifelong ugly person. So when I see someone handsome like turning, it makes my heart happy.
Yeah. But the real reason I dislike ESPN is not any one person. It's the fact that I love the football part of the draft. I love, you know, the breaking down of the value of picks, the fit of the pick, the value of the trades. And ESPN is just their highlights and they're showy. And they do this thing where like they all put out their rankings of players, you know, so and then a guy who was like their 65th ranked player goes at the 25th pick and they all praise him.
Oh yeah. Like, that absolutely.
That seems really odd to me. I'm like, why don't you point out that 40 guys you thought were better than him?
Dude, that's something I noticed about the draft coverage last night. So I watched the first half of the first rounds on the Fox feed at a buddy's house, and then I watched the back end of the first round at my own house. And dude, nobody calls nobody calls a bad pick anymore.
Right.
Like, dude, there were some famously head scratching, just ridiculous picks in that
and
first
some
round.
Bad trades, time. Or at least one or two bad trades.
Some terrible picks, and nobody's saying it anymore.
Right.
I mean, I think it's become such a cozy sort of media culture in which, you know, everybody's scratching everyone's back at all times. Like, you know, no one's saying the hard thing. Dude, I remember when Mel Kiper took the Colts to the woodshed in like the early 90s. And I forget the player who it was even over. It might have been Jeff George. It might have been the Quentin Coriat draft. I can't remember for the Colts. But anyway, Kiper took them to the woodshed. And there were definitely some like woodshed potential moments last night that nobody was saying. I was shocked. First half of the evening, I was stuck with Mike Mayock, who's knowledgeable, I think, but supremely aggravating. And, you know, I think I'd rather be locked in a room with Mel Kiper than Mike Mayock.
You know what's refreshing is listening to the Ringer NFL podcast after the draft. So I listened to it first thing this morning. It was sort of like while I was getting the kids ready for school. And Mike Lombardi...
I love Mike Lombardi.
Has no problem just gunning down stuff he thinks is dumb.
Exactly. I love that too.
He pulls no punches and he doesn't beat around the bush. It's fantastic. So, yes, I felt refreshed after that. I felt like I had scrubbed away some of the smarm of the night before.
Dude, some of the smarm, some of the syrupy PR nonsense from last night. Dude, here's an idea. I feel like the Ringer should do some kind of streamable draft commentary. that can run live during the draft so that we can put ESPN or Fox on mute and just listen to like Robert Mays and Mike Lombardi and Tate Frazier chop it up.
Work with like HBO incredible. Sports to do that. I suppose
they
probably have to have some sort of NFL rights to do that.
Some sort of NFL draft
ESPN
rights.
And Fox could do it, but
right
because it's you know it's an NFL league thing. But yeah, that would be great,
dude. That'd be bananas. I would listen to that all day long. All right, Pipe. We've kind of teased this a little bit, but let's talk about some head scratchers. Let's talk about some picks where you were just like, you know, what are people even doing with that pick? There were a couple for me. I know you've got a couple, so lay them on me.
All right, I'm going to start with one that is probably not a popular one, and that is the Giants taking Saquon Barkley.
Oh, interesting, man. Yes, let's have this conversation.
If the Giants were picking at 23, great. Uh-huh. If the Giants are picking at 14, fine. If the Giants are picking at 8, maybe. But at number 2, he's a running back. Running backs don't move the needle in the NFL. They're a valuable piece of an offense, but the Giants suck. That's why they have the number 2 pick. It just doesn't make sense to me why they took him. Ezekiel Elliott did not make the Cowboys a great team in his rookie year. Their offensive line did.
Yeah.
And he benefited from it. And the Giants don't have that, and they're expecting him to have the same effect. Like, that's a bonkers pick to me. It makes so little sense to me.
Dude, see, I kind of like it, and here's why. If they hadn't taken Saquon Barkley, they would have taken Bradley Chubb, who I think is an even riskier proposition.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
I do. Yeah.
I probably think differently about him because he's not just a pass rusher. Like, he's a full, solid, like, you know, four-down defensive end.
Yeah, he's a real defensive lineman who can do real defensive lineman things. I agree. But, you know, you don't spend a number 2 overall pick on a guy who's solid. You know, you're not looking for Chris Long right there, who's, you know, who can set the edge and get you 6 sacks. And, you know, not that Bradley Chubb will be that unremarkable, but he could be. You know, we've seen it before. I think it was a head scratcher for me that that John Elway passed on a quarterback to take Bradley Chubb. I thought for sure Elway was
funny.
Pull
I like that one.
Yeah, it's interesting, man. And I like Saquon Barkley. I really do. I look at Saquon Barkley in much the same way. And people will dispute this. Mike Lombardi would take me to the woodshed for this. But, you know, Lombardi thinks that Jacksonville probably should have drafted Deshaun Watson last year. I mean, anybody should have. He was sensational. Right. But I think for what they were trying to do, getting Leonard Fournette, it changed the culture in their building offensively such that they were able to have an offense. You know, Fournette was able to elevate a middling offensive line. And they were able to put together an offense to pair with a dominant defense. Now the Giants are in a different place. But I think Barkley is a Todd Gurley-esque. I think he's a Leonard Fournette-esque, move the needle type of player. And I actually think it was a good pick for them.
But here's the thing about both of those guys that you just mentioned. I mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. Every single running back that we just mentioned, all three of those great young running backs, and I will say they are great. I think Barkley is going to be a phenomenal player. This is not a knock on him. It's a knock on the value of the running back position.
Yeah.
Is that Gurley was great as a rookie for a not very good team. Then he was not very good. Then they completely changed their system, had a very good defense and an excellent offensive system, and then he became borderline MVP.
Yeah.
And Ezekiel Elliott, as a rookie, came in and played behind the best offensive line in football that year, played far and away the best, and led the league in rushing. Year two, had some offensive line injuries, quarterback was not as good, and the team declined dramatically. And so I just look at it, and I'm like, a running back doesn't move the needle in the same way, even if they're a really good offensive player. The thing that I heard about the Giants and part of what made this pick so a head scratcher was that they turned down a number of trade offers. People offering,
dude, that's the thing.
Multiple first rounders to them for that pick. If they could have slid back 12 or 13 spots and picked up additional first rounders,
absolutely.
That's what that team needs because they have no depth anywhere.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. They've got roster problems, man. They've got enough roster problems that, you know, Saquon Barkley's greatness isn't gonna cover all of it. So I am with you on that. Piper, I mean, obviously, Josh Allen is the ultimate head scratcher for both of us. I don't know that we need to spend a lot of time on that one. But, dude, the first one that really, really jumped out at me was Mike McGlinchey at 9 to San Francisco. All I've been hearing about this draft is that there's no elite tackles, and maybe there's not even a first round tackle in this draft. And they pass on a lot of good players to grab a guy out of Notre Dame who might be good. You know, he might be a good NFL offensive tackle. It just seemed like a reach to me. It seemed like one of those picks that, you know, it's funny. We think about last year's draft and we think that John Lynch fleeced the Bears and had this incredible draft. But you look at last year's draft, Solomon Thomas sucked. You know, the linebacker might be in jail. And now it's a big reach for Mike McGlinchey. You know, I'm not so sure the body of work for John Lynch is as, you know, great as we probably felt about it last year. What did you think of that one?
I thought it was fine. I think he was clearly the best tackle in the draft. And tackle is a little bit like quarterback in that if you can find somebody who can start for several years, you know, so be a quality NFL starter. So not Pro Bowl, just the value of that is more valuable than just, it's almost irreplaceable.
Dude, right. So you're getting it, even if you're getting a Nate Solder type right there. So I mean, you feel good about it.
I saw this with the Vikings last year, like 2 years ago. Horrific offensive line. They go out and sign Mike Remmers and who's the other guy? I forget.
Yeah.
I forget because he's a mediocre offensive lineman and it transformed their team to have two just NFL quality starters to plug in, and all of a sudden they could run the ball some and they could pass the ball some, and so I think for the Niners it makes a lot of sense. I think the other thing is that once you get outside like the top seven, elite stops being an issue.
It's a little bit of a dice throw there anyway.
You want starters at that point. If you're in the top seven and you draft somebody, like that's where you overdraft.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I look at who was there and I'm like, man, they could have had Tremaine Edmonds, they could have had Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, there were some dudes left. Derwin James was left.
Roquan Smith, I'm sorry, he went right before them.
Yeah, Roquan Smith went right before that. But okay, so let's work backward a little bit, Pipe. Can we talk about Cleveland's number four pick? Because I have a feeling that I liked it and you didn't.
I did not like it because it felt like a need pick, not because I don't like the player. He's another one of those guys who I'm like, if he went between picks 8 and 20, it would be a great fit. At 4, it feels like a reach, especially because they could have put Bradley Chubb across from Myles Garrett and had that really good. They could have put Quentin Nelson in there. They need some O-line help. They have a decent O-line, but Joe Thomas is gone.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect their whole O-line. You know, they could have had Roquan Smith. They could have had Minkah Fitzpatrick. And so I think, and he wasn't clearly the number one corner in the draft. He was one of the top two or three. I didn't love it because it felt like they had a need and they reached for it instead of drafting best talent. And I think that's what they should have done, is draft best talent.
I hear you, man. I mean, I love a high corner pick. I just like that. I like investing there. I like Ohio State defensive backs.
They've had a really good history in the
last. They've had a really, really good run. So, and as much as I like Minkah Fitzpatrick, and I do, you know, he's sort of a jack of all trades, master of none. And they already have a guy like that in Jabril Peppers who, you know, the hype on Jabril Peppers was, oh, he plays 14 positions. But I think last year proved that he, in a sense, he played zero positions. So,
right. Well, that's true. Any player who is a multi-positional player in college usually means it's going to take them a while to figure out what one position they're good at in the pros. With the exception, James is an exception because safeties are more versatile.
Absolutely. And Derwin James, you know what you're getting. Yeah. You know, you're getting an alpha, you're getting a big physical safety.
He would have been a great pick to the Browns.
Oh, he would have been. He would have been. I know, man. I know it. He took a slide that surprised me. You know, I think he's a great value there to Los Angeles at 17. But let's talk about some more head scratchers. Because I have at least one more. I'll lay it on you now. Number 15, John Gruden, Oakland Raiders, takes Colton Miller, offensive tackle, UCLA. This one shocked the H out of me, Pipe, because there were a lot of good dudes left on the board.
And they have a lot of needs.
Yep. Yeah.
And so when you combine a lot of needs with a lot of good players, it means you can basically take best player available. And they took best at a position available.
Man, they took a reach on Colton Miller. So Colton Miller, I was just looking through pre-draft stuff from even a few months ago. He was projected as like a fourth round pick before the combine, fourth, fifth round. Goes to the combine, lights it up athletically. He's got, you know, very unique height, length, you know, kind of stuff going on, which you can't teach, obviously. But UCLA stunk. They were really bad.
Yeah.
They couldn't run the ball. They didn't run the ball. You know, there was nothing about the Colton Miller UCLA experience that just jumped out.
He did not have to block elite pass rushers because
the
pack, whatever they are now, 12, 10, 8, yeah. whatever, they don't play any defense.
Yeah, yeah, they're becoming very Big 12-like in that regard. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. This one I did not get. Any other first-round head-scratchers for you, Pipe?
Yeah, the pick number 25.
Okay.
Baltimore taking Hayden Hurst.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Talk about that.
Hayden Hurst is a classic late second-round six-year starter in the NFL, you know, or 10-year starter. Yeah. Like, he's going to be a fine player.
Right.
But at 25 for a team who has no offensive talent and has limited
Correct.
Defensive depth,
Correct.
That's just Ozzie loves his tight ends.
Yeah, he does.
And,
he does. He sure does.
You know,
and he missed on one a couple years ago. He missed on Max Williams out of Minnesota.
Yep. Who, and I think that was an injury thing in part. Max blew his knee out, I think, early on. But like, he drafts these big, measurable, white, slow tight ends, and he's looking for Todd Heap. He's looking for And so they had Todd Heap, and then they had Dennis Pitta, who was just sort of an odd tight end, and then they had Ed. Ed Moore. Ed, what's his face?
Yeah, no, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
They've had so many tight ends, none of whom are elite. And
dude, see, I feel like Mike Gesicki is closer to Todd Heap, if that's what you're looking for. Well, you know, Mike Gesicki out of Penn State,
Mike
still
Gesicki
on the board.
Mike Gesicki is at least going to make plays that you're like, wow, not a lot of guys can make that play. Hayden Hurst is going to make the plays. You know who he is? He's Kyle Rudolph.
I agree. Yeah,
and Kyle Rudolph has been a
dude,
fine player.
Dude, that's the ceiling
player.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the ceiling.
And you can tell this by looking at him, and that's what I don't get. Like, if you're going to...
Dude, he's Anthony Fasano, you know?
Yes.
I mean, which, you're excited about Anthony Fasano if you grab him in the third round, but not in the first.
I mean, Calvin Ridley went one pick later, and Sony Michel, like, any of these guys who, like, anybody who can break a play, who can get
Correct.
Open, it just, that one confused the everything out of me. I did not get that pick.
Yeah, I really didn't either, man. I really, really didn't either. That was one that jumped out at me as well as being a real head scratcher. Now, let's flip it, Pipe, and let's go a little bit more positive. Let's talk about the sneaky best picks in the first round. Picks you really liked that were really sneaky. That you just thought this is a great pick. I can get us started, actually.
All right.
I don't know if either of these picks that I'm about to say qualify as sneaky, but I think by moving back a little bit and still getting Quentin Nelson, the Indianapolis Colts may have had the best night of any team last night. You know, they're another team whose roster is just a semi-pro mess at this point. But to take the guy who's probably the best player in the draft and who may get you 10 Pro Bowls, that was a big time pick for them. Roquan Smith dropping into the lap of Chicago. As a Bears fan, I love it.
As a Vikings fan, I was not happy with that because I think he's a really good player. But I can tell you, after having lived in Chicago for 12 years, he is going to light up Soldier Field, and fans are going to love that guy.
They are, man. They appreciate defense. They love a good linebacker in Chicago. I think they're going to love him. But I'm not sure either of those qualify as sneaky good picks, Pipe.
They swung at a fat pitch down the middle and hit a double. Like just,
they didn't they, screw it up.
Yep, yeah, they did exactly what they should. So yep. I thought, now, you know, all hail the victors and, you know, the rich get richer. I thought what New England did in the draft was so good.
I couldn't agree more.
And here's why. Like,
masterful.
The players they took, I think, are really, really good. Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel. Both of them, they're great fits. They're smart players. They're great players. Yep. But what they did, so we were talking a couple episodes ago, or maybe it was last one, about are they going to try to start you know, essentially building for Tom Brady's departure or loading up for Tom Brady to make another run. They did both.
I know. It was so masterful.
Because if Isaiah Wynn's going to keep Tom Brady healthy this year, be part of the line that does for an offensive needy team.
Yeah.
And if Brady retires in 2 years, they still have this guy at interior offensive line for another 4, 5, 6, 7 years after. Sony Michel, same thing. You know, if Brady retires in 2 years, they still have an explosive playmaker on the roster to support whatever quarterback replaces him. They owned the draft.
Absolutely owned the draft. And yeah, I love it. I think I texted you after the Isaiah Wynn pick. It felt very Logan Mankinsey, which to me is a huge compliment because I love that player.
Oh yeah.
And dude, I don't think they've had a back as explosive as Sony Michel in New England since Belichick and Brady have been there. You know, I mean, they've gotten it done with a lot of, you know, I say second tier, but these are dudes that I liked. I mean, I love LeGarrette Blount. I love Corey Dillon.
Yeah, and a lot of end of career guys like Corey Dillon.
Yeah,
they drafted Lawrence Maroney high, and he didn't amount to much. He had one or two okay years.
Yeah.
Speaking of running backs, head scratcher. Let's go back one question. Rashad Penny to Seattle.
Yep.
I mean, especially given the running backs who went behind him and all of their other needs, that one, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is I watched the tape of Rashad Penny, and I like big backs. I like explosive big backs. He checks a lot of boxes, but at that point, why not pull that trigger on Darius Geis, who makes a lot more sense there and is available and is – you know, essentially the same guy in terms of being big and explosive and physical and, you know, finishing runs and doing all those things that you allegedly like about Rashad Penny. Head scratcher. Now, you know, it fills a need. Obviously, their run game was a mess last year, so they had to do something there.
Their run game was a mess because they have the worst offensive line. I mean, they're just
– yeah.
Because they heavily invested in running backs in last year's draft. I mean, it was like second through fourth rounds, but –
sure.
They had a bad O-line, and Penny's not going to fix that. So, I mean, I don't think he'll be a bad player. Again, calling it a bad pick doesn't mean he's a bad player. It just means that was a bad value.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree.
What other picks did you love? Kind of sneaky good picks.
Dude, I'll tell you. Like, I still am friends with a lot of Detroit people and Michigan people. Detroit people – in general, I think didn't like the Frank Ragnow pick, center out of Arkansas. I liked it. There are a lot of ways in which the Lions have screwed up the draft in not only recent years, but in the last 20 years by kind of going for flashier, sexier draft choices. But I think Ragnow is going to be a really, really good interior lineman for them. Again, did a lot of pro-style stuff at Arkansas that I think is going to translate. Here's a pick that I loved, man. I loved our hometown Tennessee Titans taking Rashawn Evans at 22. I just felt like, you know, getting that guy right there, they didn't give up a lot to move up and get him. I think they wanted to leapfrog New England, who loves Alabama linebackers and probably would have grabbed him. I like that pick a lot, man. I think he's really good. I think he's almost Roquan Smith type good. And, you know, he makes their defense a lot better immediately.
Yeah. I think the thing that stands out about him, and even just watching his highlights, he's a different athlete than most of the guys in the first round. You know, all these guys are elite athletes in their own right, but he stood out as, he's faster and more explosive than everyone else on the field. And the Titans lacked that in the front seven on their defense. Yeah. So that's a good one. I thought the DJ Moore pick to the Panthers was a really good one too.
Dude, I kind of liked it, man. I wasn't real thrilled about any of the receivers in this draft, but DJ Moore goes to a good situation. You know, he doesn't have to be the alpha dog in anybody's receiving core there in Carolina. And
I thought the Calvin Ridley pick was good too. I think the thing that made the receiver picks good was that neither of the first round receivers were overdrafted.
Dude, right. Yeah, you don't like either of them any higher than they went necessarily. Ridley could have gone a little higher.
Yeah.
Baltimore should have taken Ridley, obviously. But where he goes, man, my goodness. He gets to stay in the South. He gets to work alongside Julio Jones. He gets to work with an elite quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, what a situation if you're Calvin Ridley. You know, you love that.
Yeah, I think it was both of those guys were great because both of them are in situations where they have elite quarterbacks, an established offense, and good other skill position players, which means that it's not like they're going to be the option 1A because that's really hard for rookie receivers.
Yeah.
Ridley, I think, is going to open some eyes this year because he's also kind of the perfect counterpart to Julio Jones because he's more of a he's a get open guy. He's a route runner. He's not a big monster deep.
He's not a win with his body type guy.
Haven't had a good guy like that I can remember.
Yeah. No, I know it, man. I know it. Let me give you another sneaky one that I love. And this one goes into probably the category of rich get richer as well. Taven Bryan, defensive tackle out of Florida, goes to Jacksonville, where he joins an already like freakishly talented front seven. I like this player, man. This guy is a bull in a china shop. Lives in the opposing team's backfield. Big, strong kid. Reminds me of an old school kind of Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael type defensive tackle, the likes of which we haven't seen much lately. I mean, the trend there has either been like huge fatties, you know, kind of just huge two gappers, or the occasional like, you know, Gerald McCoy freak of nature type of dude. But I think this is a really good player, man. I think Jacksonville's going to get better.
I hadn't seen Taven Bryan play. You know, he's not a guy I looked at, but the thing that stood out to me about him from the highlights is watching him go out of a 4-point stance. I haven't seen somebody go out of a 4-point stance since our undersized nose guard in high school.
Yeah, dude, I love it.
It just made me laugh. I was like, I didn't know people still do. I didn't know coaches still coach that. I didn't know it was a thing. I thought it was kind of fun.
What is it about undersized high school nose guards? You know what I mean? That's such a thing. And they all have a certain personality profile, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Too.
And usually they're wrestlers, too.
Yeah. Yeah. They're usually wrestlers. They're usually a little like not all there in some way, but
yeah, usually have a little bit of body odor.
Well, yeah, but
that might be all wrestlers. Let's be fair.
That's true. Pipe, any other sneaky great picks here in the first round for you?
I mean, I feel like we've talked about almost everybody. I mean, I thought the Terrell Edmonds pick to the Steelers was one of the most random weird ones in the draft. I didn't totally get that one. The Packers, I'm loath to give them any praise, but moving back in the draft, picking up extra picks, and then taking who was generally considered to be the best corner in the draft, that was a really good move by them.
Yeah, no, I hear
and
you.
And one that I heard, I think it was Lombardi pointing this out, not a move that Ted Thompson would have made. He didn't move around in the draft, but their new GM, whose name I can't remember, did. And I think he set him up. That's a little scary to me because I liked it when the Packers didn't sign free agents and didn't move around in the draft.
Dude, seriously. All right, Pipe, last topic real quick. Let's talk about Leighton Vander Esch's potential as Great White Hope. So Leighton Vander Esch.
Because you know that's what Jerry Jones is hoping for.
Most definitely. Out of Boise State, this year's Great White Hope, this year's next Brian Urlacher. Do you buy it or not?
I think he's going to be a really good pro. He is not Brian Urlacher.
Yeah.
I mean, just Urlacher was a strong safety who bulked up to 250 pounds. Vander Esch is an athletic linebacker.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good pick and just sort of one of those solid, it was a need. He was a player who was drafted at about the right level, for a team that has very little athleticism or talent on their defense, or at least not a lot of depth.
Yeah.
That was a great pick. I agree. It was a very non-Jerry pick, though. He loves the splash player, and this is not a splash pick. This is just a solid pick.
It is. It's a solid pick. I was kind of low-key rooting for Vander Esch to be there when the Titans picked, but I'm actually thrilled with who the Titans got. So
yeah, I think the Titans got the guy who has more variance. Like, Evans could be a washout. I think it's unlikely. Or he could be one of the top five linebackers in the league. Vander Esch will never be a washout unless he gets injured, and he'll never be a top 10 linebacker.
That's it, man. Yeah. The window is definitely smaller there. Pipe, we have done what we often do on this program, which is wander to and fro throughout these topics. And I have to tell you about rounds 2 and 3 tonight. In their infinite wisdom, my sons Classical School has scheduled their play, their high school spring play, for tonight. So I'm going to be streaming the draft on my phone while I watch Much Ado About Nothing. So if I'm a little slow on the text, that's why, man. But well, you know, I'm gonna pray for a fast performance and hope to get us home in plenty of time to enjoy whatever's left of the draft.
And one of my daughters has swim practice that would end at the perfect time for me to get home, plant myself in my recliner, and turn on the draft, except that my other daughter has her dance class pictures tonight, right as the draft begins. Which means that I will be carrying 44 floofy costumes into this church community center to listen to bad CCM while they go take pictures. And thank
God, of course
you will. Thank God for Sling on my phone so I can watch ESPN while that happens.
Absolutely. Pipe, what great fathers we are. You know? I mean, really. That's really the subtext.
And who says men can't multitask?
Absolutely, man. We're gonna be multitasking like champs tonight, and we hope you've enjoyed this. We certainly have enjoyed recording it. We love all things NFL draft, and until next time, who's our name, Pipe?
I think you need to go Leighton Vander Esch.
I was looking at that. Until next time, Leighton Vander Esch.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? I mean, you are called by God, and aren't we all praying the big prayer, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? So if we put two and two together, you've got a message to deliver, my friend. Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, art to make, or businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. I use my mic like a machete, so if you don't like to get your toes stepped on or pushed off cliffs to finally jump on in with Jesus, I may be too much for you. But if you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com today.